Welcome back to the Cosplay Report Podcast, All Pats on Deck, Episode 3. I am your host, as always, Damian Parson. What's going on, everybody? Man, you know, it's not a nice day out. It's cloudy, it's rainy. I'm not really looking forward to today, but, you know, it is what it is, you know? So we're just going to keep it going like that. Today, you know, on the All Pats edition, like I tell you guys all the time, every week I'm going to be dropping one Patriots related podcast per week, and that's the All Pats on Deck edition. Like I said, this is episode 3. We got a couple things I want to talk to you guys about today. Some good controversial things, you know. I believe you guys will enjoy it. So let's get right into it. OTAs started on yesterday, and there's some position battles that I want to pretty much keep my eyes on, and for all Patriot fans, keep their eyes on. Even teams, you know, wondering what the Patriots are going to do this year, keep your eyes on these battles. And here's, I'm going to start with number one. The battle I think everyone should definitely keep their eyes on is going to be running back. Like I said on the previous podcast, on the previous All Pats on Deck edition, episode 2, the thing about the running back situation is it's more than I think we've ever really had. Let me list off those names real quick. I want to test my own knowledge of my team. We got newly acquired Mike Gillisley, Rex Burkhead. You have Super Bowl hero James White. You have Deion Lewis, who we're undefeated when he's in the lineup. We also have Brandon Bolden, who is our special teamer, and DJ Foster. So that's 6 guys. I don't believe we brought Tyler Gaffney back. He showed some promise in preseason last year, but I think he got hurt again. So, you know, it is what it is. But when you look at the running back situation right now, losing LeGarrette Blount, who I spoke about on the last episode, you know, him signing with the Philadelphia Eagles, which I'm happy for him when it pertains to it. Him signing with the Philadelphia Eagles, we need that early down back, pretty much the first and second down, and it's crazy because there's some veterans that are on, like, you know, roster, you know, bubble, on the roster bubble, you know, they're kind of just on the cusp of maybe being cut, possibly being traded, different things like that. And this running back battle may provide a cut of some sort when it comes down, because the Patriots aren't going into the season with 7 running backs. It's not going to happen. 7-8 running backs. It's just not going to happen, guys. I'm sorry. That doesn't even seem logical. You know, when you look at it, Deion Lewis, you know, he is a good back, a good, you know, good change of pace back. Availability is the key. He deals with injuries a little bit too much. James White came through huge in regards to the Super Bowl with the 13 catches, 100-plus yards, and we had like 3 touchdowns, I believe. He came through huge, man, 2 or 3 touchdowns. But, so, I mean, you got, when it comes to, and then DJ Foster, the young kid out of Arizona State that we drafted last year, who has some experience at slot receiver in college, I would love to see him, you know, get some playing time. That's what the dilemma is. I would love to see him get some playing time. For the simple fact of the matter is, getting him playing time, he's a somebody who played receiver can truly be a mismatch for linebackers. You know, running in the 4-4, 4-5 range, and, you know, being shifty and agile and quick, you can definitely find a linebacker mismatch with him on the field, because he runs routes, you know, especially with his wide receiver background, he runs routes better than White and Deion Lewis. So it's like, hey, you know, what do you do with him? So Brandon Bolden, keep your eyes on him. I think he brings more special team value than White and Lewis, because, you know, Lewis does return kicks. He can return kicks. Again, he's not the healthiest guy of them all. So, again, do you want to expose him to those type of hits? I don't know. James White, he does do a pretty good job. He has returned kicks and punts, I think, sometime in his career. But he doesn't really excel at it. So, and neither does Brandon Bolden. Brandon Bolden is just on our punt and kickoffer team. He's a very solid tackler. He's a good gunner. And, you know, he gets downfield. That's why we have a pretty good kickoff and punt squad, you know, our special teams is pretty good with him and Matthew Slater and everything. So he brings that value. But again, he doesn't bring anything on the offensive side of the ball. Nothing when it comes down to catching and running the ball because of inconsistency. He showed promise early on, but I don't think, you know, he never grown into the potential that he had as a runner because he's a tough guy, big back, strong, but he just does not show up when he needs to. And that's a problem for me. That's a huge problem for me. So, again, keep an eye on this running back situation because, you know, like I said, you have Mike Gillisley, who I believe is, even without knowing the playbook right now, talent-wise, Mike Gillisley is the best running back on our roster as of right now off of talent. He has to learn the playbook. Let's be honest. He has to learn the playbook. But as long as he picks that up, as long as he gets that camaraderie down with Brady and the offensive line and everything else, once he meshes, he can be a vital piece in another championship run. Because at the end of the day, there's nothing deadlier. And now let me reiterate this. There's nothing deadlier, nothing scarier than Tom Brady with a run game. Okay? There's nothing more vital, more dangerous than giving Tom Brady a run game. Because if he can have a good, solid run game, to where you have to respect it, and he starts play actioning you. I'm gonna get to the wide receivers in a second. Listen, it's bad. It's bad for all defense. It's bad for the NFL to give this man a run game. So the position battle at running back is key. Like I said, you know, names to watch: Mike Gillisley. Keep your eyes on Rex Burkhead. I think he can bring some good vibes to the run game as well. Some good plays. He's got some shiftiness to him, some toughness. I like that about him. He's only on a 1-year deal worth like almost $4 million. So I don't expect him to get cut. So yeah, you know, don't worry, but I don't think he'll get cut. So with him, Gillisley and White, those three are pretty much the new, like, cause White just re-signed the contract. So he signed an extension for, I think, about 3 years. Then you have Burkhead for the 1-year deal, and then you have a 2-year deal with Gillisley, who they, you know, pretty much, I think, gave up a pick for as well because they signed to offer sheet. The Bills said we're not matching it because the Bills are stupid, but whatever. So, yeah, there's that. You know, the fact of the matter is those three guys probably aren't going anywhere. So the names you need to watch, I can see if DJ Foster does not carve out a spot this year, I could see him going back to the practice squad. But the two names you need to watch on whether or not they will be there come seasons, you know, beginning of the season, is Deion Lewis and Brandon Bolden. What's going to happen with them? We don't know. Let's just let this battle play out, but keep your eyes on it. Let's move right along. Like I said, we was going to get to it. We're going to get to it. Let's run real quick to the wide receiver position. This is a great battle that I'm looking forward to. I'm really excited about the wide receiver battle. A lot of people say, oh, man, you know, you guys don't have the best receiving core. We don't need the best receiver core. We have the best quarterback. We have the best guy behind center. Yeah, I know there's a lot of Aaron Rodgers fans. I get it. Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady are 1A, 1B. And then you got Breeze and Ben and you know, the list goes on. But for me, I want a guy who can lead me to the promised land repetitively. You know, and again, you don't need the best receiving core. You just need guys. You need multiple pieces and guys who have different, you know, different roles, pretty much. Their style is different. You don't want to have a ton of slot receiver like we had before. At one point, you know, we had Deion Branch, Welker, Edelman, then you had Hernandez and Gronk and stuff like that. You don't want a ton of midget receivers, but you also don't want a ton of 6'4" 4'6", 4'7" guys either. A bunch of red zone threats. You definitely don't want that, Carolina. So so that's why having the different, you know, looking at this group, you have different skill sets, different type of receivers. So let's get into it. Right now, a lot of people are wondering, you know, everybody's assuming, oh, well, you look at it, You have to believe. There's no way you could not believe Brandon Cooks is going to be a starter this year. I'm with you on that. He has to be a starter this year. Him and Edelman. Now, here's the spot that's up for grabs. The third wide receiver spot. Because now, well, not even just the third spot. But the third spot is definitely up for grabs between Chris Hogan, Amendola, and Malcolm Mitchell. Second year player out of Georgia who came up big in the second half of the Super Bowl versus the Falcons. It's like 7 catches for like 70 yards in the second half. He came up huge, huge. So for me, as good of a season, a greater season, however you want to put it, that Chris Hogan had last year, I'm fine with Malcolm Mitchell taking the next spot because, as in from a hands perspective, I feel like he has better hands and, of course, longevity. But, and Brady loves him. You know, Brady loves Malcolm Mitchell. Brady said he has the second biggest hands on the team after Gronk. And for a receiver who's not 6'4", I think, if I'm not mistaken, Malcolm Mitchell's 5'11", 6'. So, yeah, to have hands that big, that you're being, you're the second biggest hands on the team after Gronk, with other tight ends who were on the team last year, Martellus Bennett and I think Matt Lingle or whatever his name is. He's not important, but yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy to me. So Michael Floyd came on later in the year, another big wide receiver with smaller hands. It's crazy to me, man. But yeah, definitely that number three spot, that third spot on the rotation is open. Because the thing about it is a lot of people say, oh, well, he's a third receiver, so he's going to play in the slot. No, they're gonna mix and match him because Edelman will be the number one, number two type. But he, because of how elusive he is and how good and just his change of direction in space, you don't want Edelman outside all the time. He could play outside. We'll get to that in the next segment. But definitely he will be in the slot, and then the third guy will be on the outside. That's how different the Patriots' offense is. So you like, oh, I want the number one, number two guy are outside guys. Not in the Patriots' offense, they aren't. So that's just how that works. Cooks will be on the outside, and it's either going to be Hogan or Mitchell on the outside. Then, of course, and Edelman's inside, and then they'll mix them around, stuff like that. But the other spot to look at is the fifth spot. And that's because you have Brandon Cooks at number one, number two with Edelman. Him and Edelman, one, number two. Swap them out how you want. Then you got Chris Hogan right now, slated at number three. Malcolm Mitchell at number four. You got Danny Amendola at five. Now, will the Patriots carry six receivers? I'm not sure. But here's the thing. The fifth spot could be up for grabs as well because you have Devin Lucian, who they drafted in the seventh round out of Arizona State last year. He had some of the best hands in the draft last year. Ran the 4.4s, athletic, strong-handed, sure-handed receiver. The thing was, you know, getting better routes, different things like that, and see if he can adjust and really push for a spot. So you have him, then you have DeAndre White, who they re-signed, I believe yesterday, to fight in OTAs for a roster spot. And then you have the undrafted rookie free agent out of Northwestern, Austin Carr. He's 6'2", I believe, like almost 200 pounds, slot receiver. He's different than Edelman. He's kind of like a Chris Hogan type. He's a bigger body, but he's tough going across the middle, everything like that. So does the old guy and Danny Amendola get booted off the team because of these young guys? I don't know. For the future, I definitely want an influx of youth. I definitely want that. I want them to throw some young players in there, man. Some young players at the wide receiver position. Julian Edelman is going on 31, 32. Same for Danny Amendola. And Chris Hogan should be 31 this year. So that's three of your mainstays that's past the 30 mark. And not so much Chris Hogan, but Edelman and Amendola have dealt with injuries because they're more of the smaller style receivers. So you have, now I'm not saying DeAndre White has to push for a spot. I don't know what he can do. I know what he can do from when he was at Alabama, but that's college. He hasn't done much in the NFL. He can return kicks and punts, but still yet, you got to do something on offense. So The two guys I'm looking forward to seeing how they play in OTAs is Austin Carr and Devin Lucien. I think Austin Carr may have the better chance to usurp Julian Edelman, maybe as the slot receiver, because I think they want to use Brandon Cooks on the outside. So definitely keep an eye on that wide receiver battle, because it's going to be an exciting one. I'm just excited about the wide receiver group this year. But let's keep it moving. Cornerback. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, as a Patriot fan, the position besides running back, I'm so excited for running back. But the position I'm more so excited for is corner right now. When you list the names and look at the skill sets at corner that we have currently, man, it's a plethora of talent. Like, oh, man, listen. You got Malcolm Butler, our number one guy. You got rid of Logan Ryan, thank God. So then you brought in another good corner, Stephon Gilmore from your rivals, the Buffalo Bills. Appreciate you, Buffalo. So then you have Eric Rowe, you have Cyrus Jones, you have Jonathan Jones, you have Justin Coleman. We're about 6-7 deep at the moment, and you can never have too many corners, because you definitely don't want to be scarce at that position. If somebody goes down in the pass happy league, you're screwed. Let's just be honest about it. You're screwed. So for me, I'm just so excited about the cornerback battle, because of course, like I said, the main battle is more so from three on down. Because yeah, a lot of people say, well, Eric Rowe, he played well last year. He did. He got beat a couple times, and he got some lucky breaks, some drop passes and overthrows, whatever. But he played pretty well. He played pretty well last year. The thing is, Cyrus Jones, I believe, it's his time to step up and show the world I'm not a bust. He had a horrible, let me repeat that, horrible, horrendous, gross, disgusting rookie year, to the point where I think he was, after the Ravens game, if I'm not mistaken, he was pretty much deactivated. And I called it, by the way. For those people, I remember people trying to argue with me on Facebook and social media and different chat forums and stuff like that, and on different threads during that game where he fumbled, and just it was just a downward spiral. Almost gave the Ravens back the game while Tom Brady sitting on the sideline. And I said it. He needs to be deactivated. He should not play again this season. Because with the one thing, as a former running back, Cyrus Jones is a former running back before coming to Alabama. And then he had some of the best hands on the team when it came to intercepting passes. So and he was one of the best punt returners there last year as well. So to see him come to the league and struggle in that form just didn't make any sense, that you are struggling to hold on to the ball. So again, he needs to step up. And that's why I believe he may push Eric Rowe in a lot of ways in certain matchups. Because everybody knows Bill Belichick is huge on matchups. Matchups, matchups, matchups. And the biggest thing is simply mixing and matching to the other offense. Like I said before, if you look at the Steelers offense, albeit that Martavis Bryant stays away from the weed, hey, we can only hope, right? So if Martavis Bryant stays away from the weed, you got to look at what the Steelers, potentially are going to put out on the field. I'm not worried about Le'Veon Bell as a receiver. I don't really care. He can catch those 80 passes. I don't care. But when you look at the actual receiver, keyword actual, all right, because Le'Veon Bell is not a receiver. The actual receivers, when you look at the actual receivers, you have Martavis Bryant, Antonio Brown, Eli Rogers, Sammy Coates, Kobe Hamilton, newly acquired Juju Smith-Schuster. So that's a six deep group. And they can come out in any type of personnel when it comes down to receivers. I'm not putting a corner on Le'Veon Bell. No, I don't care about him like that. But when you look at it, if they bring out Eli Rogers, either you're going to put, so that would leave Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant on the field. They go to a three wide receiver set with Bell in the backfield with Ben. you're going to put pretty much, you're pretty much going to put, I will put Malcolm Butler, as much as I want to keep him on Brown, I'll put Malcolm Butler because we got Gilmore now. I will put Malcolm Butler on Eli Rogers in the slot so he can be physical with him, rough him up, and I'll put Stephon Gilmore on Antonio Brown, and then I'll put Eric Rowe on Martavis Bryant. Now, if Eric Rowe struggles, you pull him out of the game, you put Butler back on Brown, you put Stephon Gilmore back on Martavis Bryant, and you put Cyrus Jones on the inside as long as Cyrus Jones steps up his play, because he has the skill set to be a lockdown slot corner, a lockdown nickel corner. He has that type of skill set where he with his strength, his size, and his quickness inside, he can play very well if he steps up his game and get better. Can't have a pity party. He said, he doesn't feel like he was a part of the team, and he can't celebrate the victory in the Super Bowl. That's a pro. There's pros and cons to that. The pro is that means this guy here is just wired differently. You know, there's some guys who are, you know, they're practicing, oh, I got a ring. Or guys, you know, they literally didn't dress 4 games, but they're on the active roster, or they're on the roster, so they get a ring, and they're just happy about it. Man, I'm a Super Bowl champion, yada yada. But when you look at a guy who says, I don't feel good about this. I wanted to contribute. I was brought here to contribute, and I hurt the team, and they still want a ring in spite of my stupidity, in spite of my horrible play. Well, I like that. I like a guy who may think like that. I like a mindset like that, because if he reacts that way, that means, does that mean he's going to be motivated for this up and coming season? I think so. Just by off of his statement, I assume so. He has to be motivated. So I want to see what happens with that. I want to see if he pushes Eric Rowe. So keep an eye on that third and fourth cornerback spot this up and coming season, especially in OTAs and mini camp and training camp. Man, football's coming back around, guys. But yeah, that those are the three spots I want to, you know, address and talk about when it pertains to the OTAs. Is just, like I said, running back, receiver, and cornerback. All right. Now, let's jump to something that's a little controversial. I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but let's jump to something that I've had many arguments with different people before, you know, a couple years ago. Wells Welker, when he spent those years, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, he spent about 6 or 7 years, right? From 2007 to 2012. So yeah, he spent a good couple years, 5, 6 years with the Patriots, right? And he was a very productive receiver with the Patriots. You know, he had what? Let me see here. 1, 2, 3, 4. He had 5 1,000-plus yard receiving seasons. Then he had what? 1, 2, 3, 4. He had 5. Whoa. Like he racked up receptions. He racked up receptions, 122, 123, 112, 111. He really did a lot of great things. You know, 2011 was his best year, 122 receptions, 1,569 yards, and 9 touchdowns. Great stuff. Here's the thing. A lot of people argue he's better than Julian Edelman. No, he's not. And I'm going to tell you why. So the debate is Julian Edelman or Wes Welker, who do I want? Give me Edelman. And here's why. Welker, going back to Texas Tech, has always played receiver. He's a full-time receiver. Texas Tech had him. They produced him. They produced Amendola. 2 really good slot receivers. Shifty slot guys, right? And look at Edelman. Edelman was at Kent State playing full-time quarterback. He did not play receiver. He was an athletic. He was pretty much a spread quarterback before it was famous, when you look at it, before it was huge. And that's what he was. And Edelman, you know, you look at his best season, you know, I mean, look at his best season. You could say his best year with, you know, receptions, yards, and touchdowns was 2013, 105, 105 receptions, 1,056 receiving yards, and 6 touchdowns. Last year, you know, dealing with the whole, you know, Brady being out 4 games and pretty much all of the new weapons around him, Hogan, Mitchell, Dola, Gronk still being there for the portion of the season, and Bennett, and then you got the pass catching running backs back there and stuff like that. He started off kind of slow, but he picked it up with 98 receptions, 1,100 yards, and he only had 3 touchdowns. But the thing about it is, for me, I tell you guys all the time, stats don't tell the entire story. Stats does not tell the entire story. The thing about it is, you got to look at the skill set and what they, you know, and how they contribute to the team. Welker, let's go back to, 2012 in the Super Bowl. The Patriots had a chance to win that game. Welker, it was a busted coverage by New York, by the Giants. Brady threw a ball to Welker up the seam. Was the pass a little, should he have led him up the field or threw to the right, over the right shoulder? He should have. He threw over the left shoulder. I think Brady may have just, you know, been like, oh my God, he's open, and just let it go. And expected his playmaker to make a play, right? Well, Welker, the unathletic Welker, instead of just, he's tracking it over his right shoulder, instead of him looking over, just flipping his head around, it's not that hard, guys. Just look over the left and readjust your body and catch it. You know, it's not that big of an adjustment. Even if you catch it and go and fall to the ground, you're good. You can possibly, there was nobody really in the air. You could possibly get up and run for another 15 yards and maybe even score. Who knows? Or maybe you flip your head around, catch it in stride, and keep going, Welker. No, he tries to do a complete turnaround, jump in the air, catch. Just, oh my God, an athletic play by a receiver that's unathletic. Good job. Good stuff. Good stuff, Welker. Good stuff. See, for me, I diagnosed the game a little differently than everybody else. I don't look at just stats. Welker was a body catcher. You rarely saw Welker coming down with catches with his hands, right? You rarely saw that. Welker had the chance to ice and close out that Super Bowl. We could have won that game. Instead, Eli Manning got the ball back, and we all know what happened after that. So, you know, hey, it is what it is, right? It is what it is. But for me, like I said, when you look at it, it's not just stats. Now, let's look at it. Edelman did not truly become a starting receiver for the Patriots until 2013. That was, what, 4 or 5 years ago. Because 2013, 14, 15, and 16, he was a receiver. Remember, early in his career, this guy played slot corner. He was returning kicks and punts since he got here. Yeah, he had 18 combined tackles in 2011, from playing defense and everything. Like, he definitely was not a receiver. They were trying to mold him. But what the thing about it is, reason why I want Edelman over Welker, mindset, passion, grit. Edelman's a dog. You look at, just watch the run game. I've seen Edelman pancake guys. I've seen, like, watch the Super Bowl winning run by the toss sweep, the motion by Edelman, and the toss sweep to James White. He went in and just went full speed and hammered the guy. Didn't even care. You look at the catch, because we all got to remember, Welker dealt with concussions. Welker was a type of guy, Welker would catch the ball and go down. And if you listen to the players when they talk about Edelman on the top 100 list, you know, look that up on YouTube or NFL.com. That's what they told me. It's like, you know, one guy, I can't remember who it was. One player was like, you know, when you look at Edelman, man, he's not like those other little itty-bitty receivers, those little receivers. He doesn't catch the ball and go down immediately. He catches the ball and tries to make you miss and different things of that nature. And that's big, because getting yards after catch, he knows, just like Welker, he knows how to find the zone. He knows how to sit in the zone. The thing about it is, he knows how to make plays after the catch. And, you know, he's really, like I said, he's really feisty. I love that about him. He will, I remember watching the game against the Broncos, in Denver, he wasn't even completely healthy. It was after he messed his foot up in the 2015 season. He was in the slot. Aqib Talib came to face him in the slot, man up on him, try to press him. Well, anybody that knows football knows that Aqib Talib is shiftier receivers who can make him open, because he's a tall, longer corner, tight hips. If you can make him open his hips, you can, you know, you kind of have him at your will then, because he can't just flip and change and restart directions, different things like that. He's never been that type of guy. That's what you do to bigger corners who aren't the best athletes. So what Edelman did was Edelman sold it to, like, he was going to the inside. He gave him a little, you know, shake, got him to open his hips, stopped and started, basketball out, ran inside like he's running a slant, boom, stopped on the dime, ran back outside, and kind of left to leave sitting there because he could not change directions that fast. So, and like I said, Welker was not healthy. I mean, Edelman was not healthy, you know, 100% at the time. So he ended up having foot surgery after that in that offseason to repair the issue, similar to what Dez had that year as well. So the thing about it is, as prolific as Welker was, you know, catching all those receptions and having 13, 14, and what, 1,500 yard receiving and stuff like that, with, he has more touchdowns. But he was a full-time receiver. Edelman came on, and his drive, his work ethic is what really gets me. This guy did not want to be not a bust, because he was drafted with 7th round. He just didn't want to be a guy to be kicked out the league. He didn't want to be washed away out the league. He found a way to reinvent himself, and he did that. And not even just that, he came up huge when it mattered. Welker never came up big in those big games. Like I said, in the Super Bowl, I need that catch, Welker. I need that. When he tried to catch with his hands over his head, he couldn't do it. Amendola, I've seen Amendola do it. I've seen Edelman do it. That bothers me when the only thing you're good at is letting the ball get into your body. You understand what I'm saying? Yes, Edelman does it. He does it too. But on slants and stuff, if you listen to Michael Irvin, that's what you're supposed to do. I don't kill Welker for the slants and drag route stuff like that. I kill him. Why can't you be effective downfield? You know, why can't you be effective downfield? I've seen Edelman be effective downfield. So give me Edelman all day long. Give me that feisty guy who's going to block for my running back, who's going to fight in the middle of the field, who can still run the seam routes, who can run any route in the book pretty much. He's not the fastest, but he can get away from people. The guy who can make multiple defenders miss. Look at that AFC Championship game against the Steelers. There's a couple passes on the sideline where he's only supposed to get 5 yards. He jukes a guy. He you know, gives another guy a little two-step. Then he lowers his shoulder and bowls through two more defenders. He has a running back's mentality. Welker does not. He never did. And that bothered me. Because at the end of the day, I need you to make plays. Don't just catch 15 passes in the game for 105. I need you to be able to, when necessary, we need that first down, juke a guy, juke another guy, and run through a guy. Force your way. Welker did not have that type of mentality, and that bothers me. Again, that bothers me. So, and I mean, hey, he went to the Super Bowl with us, and we lost. He went to the Super Bowl with the Denver Broncos, and he lost. This guy's a bad luck charm, guys. Edelman, come on now. Edelman, the pad, you know, hey, listen. The hit he took from Cam, from Bam Bam Cam. Bam Bam, thank you, ma'am. Bam Bam Cam. The hit he took from Cam in Super Bowl 49, coming across the middle. He took the hit. I'm pretty sure he was concussed, and they didn't check it. I think they both were concussed, but he took the hit. If his knee did not touch, he would have gotten all the yards that he ran for after the hit. But his knee touched, he bounced up, and he kept running. Because I would have did the same thing, because I thought he was, I didn't know he was down until the replay showed that he was down. But he didn't die. Walker would have passed out. Walker would have passed out, dropped the ball. Yeah, Walker would look like Steven Ridley versus the Ravens a couple years ago in the playoffs when the Ravens took his head off. Yeah, and he fumbled. He was dead on field. So I'm sorry. I like Welker. He was big for us. But give me Edelman, all right? I don't care about the stats. What, you know, Welker doing all of, he did a lot of great things, but at the end of the day, you didn't win what we want to win, and that's a title. You had the opportunity to step up. You had the opportunity, especially in 2012. Not just that catch. Gronk was hobbled by that Bernard Pollard tackle that sprained his ankle. You have the opportunity, man. Step up. Step up. You didn't. Edelman? Oh, yeah. Darryl Simon? Edelman worked him all game in that Super Bowl, man. Edelman gave him fits, and he came up big with the game-winning touchdown. The touchdown that took the lead. Again, Welker was a good player for us. Good player. He wasn't much before he came to New England, but he was a good player. But give me Julian Edelman all day long over Wes Welker. Now, let's keep it going. Let's keep it going. I didn't mean to take that much time on it, but you know, it is what it is, guys. What I want to talk about is the question here. Has Tom Brady gotten better with age? Think about it. You know, they say wine gets better, you know, with age. Is he like fine wine? Is he? Let's talk about it real quick. As I pull up some things on my iPad here, when you look at it, Tom Brady last year was more aggressive, and that was huge in a lot of aspects. He was more aggressive on the money down. Third downs are money downs. Because if you convert, you stay on the field. If you do not, the offense comes on and puts your defense back on the field. The defense's goal is always stop you on third down. We all know this. This is common knowledge, right? So when you look at it, Tom Brady on third downs, according to Pro Football Focus, led the league with most yards per attempt on third down 2016 with 11.4 yards per attempt. He was aggressive. He was aggressive. Aaron Rodgers at 9.3. Kirk Cousins was at 9.3. Marcus Mariota, my guy, who I'm just a fan of now. Marcus Mariota was in fourth, 9.0. Ben Roethlisberger, wow, with the weapons he has, he was at fifth with 8.7. And the NFL average is 7.3. Brady was pretty much 4 yards above the NFL average. That's ridiculous. On most yards attempted on third downs. He, like I said, he was very aggressive. When you look at the way that he was playing, he was not planning on allowing defense to just stop us on third downs and everything like that. When you look at what Brady was able to do and what the thing is about going into this year, his deep passing accuracy and everything, it got so much better last year with the addition of Chris Hogan. And, you know, of course, everybody knows Gronk is deep down the seam when he's healthy. But Chris Hogan caught a lot of his passes were long passes. So when you look at, and then think about it here, I want you guys to think about this real quick. Let's look at the wide receivers deep pass catch rate in 2016. Pro Football Focus lists T.Y. Hilton as number one with 51.5 catch rate. On, you know, deep targets, minimum of 20 deep targets. AJ Green was at 50. DeSean Jackson was at 50. And guess who was at fourth place with 45.8? Newly acquired Brandon Cooks. So now you already know that Tom Brady is not afraid to go downfield anymore. Now you give him another weapon who could go downfield. You know, who could, because there were times, man, I think it was in the Jets game, Malcolm Mitchell was able to get behind the coverage, and he's not the fastest guy either, but he was able to get behind the coverage, and that was before him and Brady really got a good connection, and it was just like a little off. I swear in one of those Jets games, Malcolm Mitchell probably could have had 3 touchdowns, but you know, it is what it is in that regard. Tom Brady is just getting, like I said, he's becoming more aggressive. When you look at, he was extending more plays with his feet. That was big for me, because if you ask, you know, any of you guys, you know, ask Marvin, my colleague Marvin Neighbors, he'll tell you, I was critical of Brady a few years ago because Brady was not trying to, I don't want him to be Aaron Rodgers. I don't want Tom Brady to be Cam Newton. I don't want him to do any of those things. What I want him to do is what he did last year, when the protection is good to decent, But you got, and then you got to remember the weapons. That's why when people like to get in this debate with me, of him and Aaron Rodgers, list me the weapons that Aaron Rodgers, that Tom Brady has, is better than Aaron Rodgers besides Rob Gronkowski. List them. List the guys. I swear to you, you can't. I swear to you, you can't. Because I can argue. Now, not including Brandon Cooks for this year, but last year, I could argue Davante Adams is better than Chris Hogan. We know this. We knew this when Davante Adams was coming into the league out of college. Okay? So that was a given. Jordy Nelson, is his best receiver, is better than all our receivers. So he's a top receiver in this league. Top 15, top 10 maybe in a lot of people's eyes. Because when he wasn't there, Aaron Rodgers was not the same guy. He didn't look the same. So you have him who can literally beat number one, two, and three corners. So, yeah, you have him. Randall Cobb, come on. The boy can ball. He's a little bit gadgety. They use him in the gadget form, but he can ball. And he's a little bit of a mismatch problem himself. So, yeah, come on. Come on. Come on. Ty Montgomery, as a receiver, wasn't bad either, skill set-wise. But they had to put him at running back because they didn't have anybody. I don't know what they're going to do with him now, but... Yeah, let's be serious here. So when you look at the fact that, yeah, both receiving corps without Jordy, both of them the year before struggled to get off press man coverage. And in the Super Bowl, creating separation when you don't have the most athletic receivers, you got to be hecka accurate, man. You got to be hecka accurate. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, it happens. But when you look at the fact that, you know, Tom Brady had to literally deal with guys who could not create that much separation, when the offensive line is starting to break down and you got guys, you got corners in the hip pocket of your receivers where you're like, I don't have a throw, I don't have a lane. And instead of him just, you know, and he does it, he's smart, he doesn't take the big hits, he will take the sack, and I'm fine with that. I don't want you getting killed and taking headshots. But at the end of the day, when you look at it, he didn't just stand it. He didn't get complacent. He didn't say, oh, well, I'm going to just throw it away. No, he moved around the pocket. He had some of the best anticipation in the pocket, just the way he moves and shuffles his feet. But when the pocket broke down, he got out of the pocket and made plays with his legs. I'm not saying he ran 15 yards downfield, which he did. I saw him do it like twice. But it was more so getting out of the pocket and buying time. He bought time, man. And that allowed his receivers to, because you can't, as a corner, you can't cover 8 seconds. It's not possible. You're not going to do that. So when you have a guy running cross field on a slant, Brady broke out the pocket, and then everybody stops or is trying to figure out what's going on. Hey, Edelman cuts back cross field. Boom. That's a big 20-yard catch coming cross field. So he made plays with his legs. I know a lot of people are like, oh, it's the system. Tom Brady carries that offense. You can say what you want. You know, it's Tom Brady, okay? Tom Brady or bust. Because, yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo played well for the time he was in there. We won a game with Jacoby Brissett not even throwing 200 yards because Brock Osweiler is trash. But at the end of the day, when you really talk about it, let's talk about it. Arizona Cardinals, one of the worst teams in the league last year. By far. The Miami Dolphins, we nearly lost to them anyway, but we didn't beat them with Garoppolo when they were at their best. They got better during the year. They got a lot better during the year, and they played better. Ask the Steelers. You know, when Tannehill was there, not when Matt Moore is at quarterback in the playoffs, but whatever. So, you know, you look at that, and who else? They beat the Texans. Brock Osweiler was out there just throwing. He threw a pick or two. He just was. He was trash, man. So they had a kind of a. And then we got shut out with Jacoby Brissett. You know, we got shut out with Jacoby Brissett at quarterback. You know, versus the Bills at home. At home, our defense gave up 16 points. 16. They were on the field all game, and they gave up 16 points, and you couldn't get anything. On the offense, nothing. But, you know, fast forward, you know, weeks later when Tom Brady's there and we completely demolished him. Completely demolished him. Yeah. So, yeah, for all those naysayers, we had a very, very easy first 4 weeks. But at the end of the day, you know, when you look at it, like I said, Tom Brady just got what, 39 years of age. And what, he threw what, 2 interceptions last year? The guy was on fire. He balled out, man. And when we were down, defense had to make some plays. You put the ball on his back at 39 years old. They put the team on his back, put the ball in his hands, and he went out there and he did what he had to do. And that was win the Super Bowl. Once he got hot, Taylor Gabriel said it to Mohamed Sanu, man, this is Tom Brady. We got to put up 40. This is Tom Brady. You don't get, nobody makes that statement if they don't respect you and know that you're great. And they know that you're clutch. The fact of the matter is, Tom Brady, he's an emotional leader. He keeps everybody at ease. But when he needs to fire him up, he fires him up. He lets him know, we're not out of this. So, has he gotten better with age? Yes, he has. Yes, he has. And like I said, he's more aggressive. He's throwing the ball downfield. He's worked on his mechanics and kind of throwing the ball downfield. Adding Brandon Cooks may just extend him at least another year or two. So just check that out. So the question was, does Tom Brady get better with age? Or has he gotten better with age? Is he like fine wine? I think so. I know a lot of you guys don't like it. But that's my man's. That's my guy. Like T.O. said, that's my quarterback, man. That's my quarterback, you know? You can talk bad about him, but he got 5 rings, though. Yeah, talk about him. Talk about him. He got 5. That's my quarterback. That's my quarterback. So, yeah. Shout out to T.O., who should be in the Hall of Fame right now. Shout out to Terrell Owens, man. But, yeah. And, you know, I want to close it out with this. The Patriots, you know, are on the way back to the Super Bowl, I believe. All right? I just want to close out with that. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. We don't know what's going to happen, but on paper, it looks pretty good. But, yeah, today was a fun show, guys. You know, we just pretty much talked about, you know, like I said, we just talked about the OTAs, the position battles, running back, receiver, corner. And then, of course, you have, you know, the Julian Edelman versus Wes Welker debate. Is Tom Brady getting better with, you know, is Tom Brady like fine wine? Does he get better with age? Man, that was a great show. Definitely, guys, I appreciate you guys for tuning in with me today. Follow us on Twitter, man, at CouchRR, CouchRR on Twitter. We will follow you back. We have great discussions. We retweet. We do everything, man. We're very active there. Follow us, you know, find us on Facebook at the Couch Rider Report. Definitely find us on iTunes, the Couch Rider Report on iTunes. Subscribe, leave a review, share, tell your friends. If you can't, you know, we're on Podomatic. Go to Podomatic.com, search for the Couch Rider Report or Couch Rider Report, and we'll be there, man. You know, posting up every week, 3-4 episodes, trying to. That's the number. But I appreciate all the support and all you guys who have subscribed so far. Much love to you. I thank you again. I'm Damien. I'm your host. This is All Pats on Deck, bringing the original sports perspective from my couch to yours. Thank you guys so much for joining me. You guys have a great day.